A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Radio, radio, what would life be? What would life be without it?
Media Network, the weekly communications review, hosted by Jonathan Marks.
Thank you very much. Right, let's have an instant surprise contest. What would life be like without Morse code on the radio? Will it ever really disappear from the shortwave wireless airwaves? A prize of a Radio Netherlands t-shirt to the first person who can decipher the following Morse test and phone our answer line, Hilversum 724-222. Ready? Well, I didn't say that contest was going to be easy now, did I? Let me say a proper hello. In the next half hour, we'll do our best to work through a whole pile of news items that have come in over the last 7 days. First, the general news media seems to have picked up on last week's story about the goddess of democracy, a ship which left a French port last Friday, bound for waters off the coast of the Chinese mainland. The $1.3 million broadcast ship is supposed to use a high-power medium wave transmitter when it gets there to beam towards the People's Republic from the high seas. It seems the rather vocal leader of the pro-democracy students group in the United States, a man by the name of Wu Kai-si, is heavily involved in the scheme, although he seems to have left the United States without the support of the Chinese student community. The 27-metre-long vessel left La Rochelle in France last week in a blaze of publicity, but judging from video footage, without a mast to support a proper medium-wave broadcast antenna. Are they going to use a simple piece of wire as an antenna then? One wonders just how much technical advice this group has taken. Meanwhile, in Lithuania, there was a dramatic announcement on Sunday night from Radio Vilnius.
Hello, I'm Zolda Melite, alongside with Vlada Dobolev, welcoming you to our broadcast on a very special day for Lithuania.
Sunday night, at 10:45 p.m., the Supreme Council of the Republic of Lithuania proclaimed the restoration of the independent Lithuanian state.
And here is the text of the act.
Ironically, the only way to hear Lithuania reliably is via transmitters in the USSR and Bulgaria, which relay the programmes. The station made seasonal alterations at the start of this month, and the reliable 7400 kHz frequency has now gone. Reception here in Hilversum is therefore poor. That recording you just heard was made in Denmark by Stig Havik Nielsen on 11770 kHz at 23 hours UTC on Sunday. The schedule of the station is now 22:30 to 23 hours on 666 and 1557 kHz medium wave and two frequencies on shortwave 6100 and 9675. There's a repeat at 23 hours, beamed to Europe and North America, on 666 kHz medium wave and 6100, 11770, 12060, 15180, 17665 and 17690 kHz. But with the independence announcements, will Radio Moscow stop relays from transmitters not on Lithuanian soil? We'll just have to see. To Africa now, and on the 1st of March, the Southwest African Broadcasting Corporation changed its name to the Namibian Broadcasting Corporation. The on-air slogan is Radio Namibia in English, and here's that new sign-on.
Thank you. This is Radio Namibia, broadcasting on FM from Windhoek. Welcome to today's transmission. We wish you good listening.
Staying in Africa, from radio to television. A private TV station in North Africa has plans to start broadcasts to the rest of the African continent and also to Europe. The TV station is called 2M International, the 2M standing for the second TV station in Morocco. We called up one of the channel's spokeswomen, Mrs. Renée Flamand, to find out more about it.
2M International is une chaîne privée.
2M International is a private commercial TV channel. It's the first private television operation in Africa. Our programming consists mainly of films, TV series, and sports. We broadcast both in French and Arabic from 10 a.m. until 1 a.m. Part of our programs are scrambled because our financing comes primarily from subscribers' fees and advertisements.
But 2M International now wants to expand to the rest of the African continent. So how are they going to feed their signal?
By satellite. We aren't using a direct broadcast satellite. Our signals are scrambled and sent up to an Intelsat communication satellite. They're then beamed to local transmitting sites to ensure that our signal reaches all the subscribers in Morocco who have a decoder. Since the Intelsat satellite covers major parts of Africa, we're also planning to expand and narrowcast on a point-to-multipoint basis to Francophone countries like Ivory Coast, Senegal, Gabon and Zaire.
Well, given the lack of infrastructure in many African countries, those plans seem rather ambitious. But 2M International is working out agreements with several countries, so they say. It'll provide them with dishes to receive the signals and equipment to feed them to local subscribers. In a sense, 2M International's plans are quite similar to those of a French private TV station, Canal Plus, which is trying to build up a market in French-speaking Africa. Even though 2M International also has programmes in Arabic, it has no plans at present to broadcast to the Middle East, because that would involve leasing another satellite. However, the TV channel is interested in another lucrative market, namely the large North African community living and working in Europe.
The programmes in French could appeal to African countries, while the Arabic programmes could be of interest to the North Africans living in Europe and to other people who speak Arabic. We want to expand into Europe via cable. Last October, we started broadcasting in the northern French city of Roubaix on an experimental basis. We're offering people a three-hour package of programmes in prime time, 3 days a week, on Friday, Saturday and Sunday. The programmes are exclusively in Arabic. We're now negotiating with Paris, and we hope to be available in the Paris region quite soon.
And it seems negotiations with cable systems in Belgium and Holland are quite advanced. Now, did you recognise the voice of Richard Jinbe on that ID from Radio Namibia a few minutes ago? Well, it wasn't fake, because he actually works there. In his spare time, he also monitors the radio for this programme. Richard.
And now a couple of items from Angola. Radio Nacional has made some changes to its international service. The new times are as follows: French, 1900, English, 2000, and Spanish, 2100 hours. The frequencies used are 3375, 7245, and 9535 kilohertz. Medium wave is no longer used. The A program is now carried on 5500 kHz. This out-of-band frequency replaces 4953, and the times of operation appear to be 1500 to 0500 hours. In the early mornings, around 0400 hours, they're also noted on 6530 kHz in parallel, but the origin of this outlet is not known. And lastly, the UNITA station has been noted irregularly on new 7390 kHz, that's at 0500, in parallel to 9700. Then at 1100 hours, the new frequency of 9850 kHz is used, and this frequency is in parallel to 11830 kHz.
Thanks, Richard, for those tuning suggestions. Now to a letter from Mike Fern, who lives in California, USA, who has a friendly reprimand.
OK, I forgive you. I have this picture of you stumbling through Hilversum in a killer snowstorm carrying a cloth-covered box on your head. That's enough to settle anybody for 3 days. But I don't forgive your frequency bureau. Your frequency bureau does run for 24 hours a day, I hope, and can give you a better overall picture than I can.
Confused? Well, Mike wonders why our frequency bureau didn't spot an announcement on HCJB in Quito, Ecuador, made in late February, that radios had forced their way into the transmitter site of this long-established religious broadcaster. The studios are based in Quito. Actually, our frequency bureau are a team of 5 very hard-working people, but their mission is to check audibility of Radio Netherlands frequencies, not monitor the contents of other international broadcasters. As it happens, in the course of their work, they have come up with several news coups for this programme. But it's not a monitoring service, which I think you're referring to. Mike continues.
The Los Angeles Times had a story some weeks ago about cable rustlers who steal entire stretches of commercial power line for the scrap value of the copper and aluminium. This would appear to be a similar operation.
Well, let's not speculate. As to events at HCJB, Mike's referring to this announcement.
11,775 kilohertz. Due to severe equipment problems at our transmitter site, we may not utilize all of these announced frequencies at any one time.
So, what do they mean by that? Just before we came on the air, I put a call through to Brent Orrod, who's director of the English service for HCJB in Quito, and asked him for an explanation.
Well, early in the morning of February 21st, some armed men entered our transmitter building in Pifo, which is about half an hour away from us here in Quito. They tied up the 2 operators who were on duty and stole about 50 circuit boards. These boards, among other things, control the antenna switching unit at PIFO and our 500 kilowatt transmitter and our audio processing system. They also stole a station vehicle. They left a note demanding $250,000 and threatened additional damage to our facilities. There were also some threats made against our personnel. By mid-morning on the day of the robbery, our engineers had us back on the air with all but the 500 kilowatt transmitter. Pre-established contingency plans were activated by the leadership of HCJB and immediately implemented. The crisis management team sought advice from the Ecuadorian authorities, and they've been very helpful. We also received valuable assistance from the U.S. Embassy in Quito. We believe that this attack was a criminal activity rather than a terrorist attack. The motive seemed to be money. The robbers have contacted us several times since the attack and have restated their demands and their threats. Our management is considering what our response should be to those demands.
That's the situation as far as the robbers are concerned, but what are you doing from the engineering point of view to put matters right?
Our engineers are right now building new circuit boards to put into the transmitter and the antenna switching system. We're having our engineers in the U.S. Construct some of these boards and send them down, and other boards are being made here in Quito.
And how long do you think it'll be before that 500 kilowatt is back? I mean, is it a matter of days or a matter of weeks or what?
They're looking in terms of weeks. I think what has been taken out of it is quite vital, and it's going to take quite a bit of time to get that back running. Since the 500 kilowatt's been down, we've also lost another transmitter due to a mechanical failure, and that should be back on the air in at least a couple of weeks. So we're really running on a very tight schedule at the moment.
Now we're off to the northern part of South America and a very difficult shortwave catch for European listeners.
Venezuela.
Actually, there's a dispute as to whether that traditional folk song used in the interval signal there really has its origins in Colombia or Venezuela. However, that's just an aside. Even though Venezuelan national radio announces several shortwave frequencies, it only appears to use one of them, namely in the 31-metre band, 9540 kHz. The station only broadcasts in Spanish at the moment, but it plans to start transmissions in other languages in just a few weeks. Meanwhile, another station is going to go on the air from Caracas in the near future, the Voice of Venezuela, which belongs to the Venezuelan state-run broadcasting system. Radio Netherlands' Spanish-language media programme, Radio Enlace, has a correspondent in Venezuela, Jorge García Rangel. Last week he filed this interesting report.
Venezuela National Radio has come up with a number of interesting plans for this year. For example, the station wants to start broadcasting in English, Portuguese and French. The shortwave transmissions in these three new languages will enable Venezuela to get its point of view across to other countries. Venezuelan National Radio broadcasts four different programs at the moment. 630 kHz is the frequency for light music, 1050 kHz for classical, the FM program is on 91.1 MHz, and there's a shortwave outlet, as well as the new Voice of Venezuela, which will soon start test transmissions.
So, is Venezuela National Radio trying to start up another international service with this Voice of Venezuela project?
Yes, the Voice of Venezuela will be part of the national radio station. I want to emphasize one thing. Venezuela is about to become the first country in the world to have two international radio stations operated by the government. The Voice of Venezuela will broadcast on medium wave, on the frequency of 1240 kHz. In other words, it will reach neighboring countries like Colombia, Brazil, and the Netherlands Antilles. It will use two medium-wave transmitters, both with an output of 500 kilowatts.
So those transmitters will be coupled together to make a total output power of a megawatt. To sum up, then, there'll be two international radio stations broadcasting from Venezuela shortly, Venezuelan National Radio in the 31-metre band, in Spanish, and starting as soon as maybe next month in three other languages, on the frequency of 9540 kHz. Also soon from Caracas, the Voice of Venezuela, on 1240 kHz, medium wave only, in Spanish.
Radio Netherlands. With such high-tech equipment, nothing can go wrong. Can go far or go wrong.
Now a follow-up report to news a few weeks back on this programme that incremental radio was starting up in Britain. Julian Clover compiled this next feature. Scanning the radio dial at the moment in downtown London, it's difficult to decide what is pirate and what's legal. Sometimes the audio quality is misleading.
Over the course of your well, and you're going to stay with me till 12 o'clock midday today. Let's away with our first record.
Rock and roll thunder.
Veronica.
First up, Herman's Hermits, back to 1967. When it's hard, you can take it or leave it.
With the sound of intense and mellow. You're locked to WIBS, our 102.4. In the hot seat, you've got DJ Levy. Feeling a bit down in the river. But the show must...
Slowly but surely, the British radio dial is beginning to change, with more choice being awarded to the listener. London is seeing the change first, and transformation is coming over the FM dial. The problem hasn't been quantity. In recent years, the proliferation of pirate operators has meant the dial has been crammed full of the same thing. First it was Soul, and more recently Black Dance, which masqueraded under the guise of community radio. For the purists, like the Community Radio Association and the Association for Broadcasting Development, it was the announcement of incremental licences in 1989 which provided the first real opportunity for their kind of radio since the cancellation of the community radio experiment 3 years earlier. Community radio proper has been tried before. Radio Jackie made a success of it in southwest London until the authorities finally became fed up with the popular pirate, and Radio Thamesmead proved it could work for an audience of just 4,000 via cable on the Thamesmead estate in southeast London. Incremental Radio, possibly the worst name in British broadcasting history, obtained its clumsy title because the new services would all be in areas currently served by independent radio, and provide something extra. The resulting stations have been quite diverse, and with an amnesty given to pirates who closed down before the 1st of January 1989, some familiar names have appeared. London Greek Radio, who in a unique arrangement shares its North London frequency equally with Afro-Caribbean WNK.
Μέχρι τότε εύχομαι ο Θεός να είναι πάντα πάντα μαζί σας και μαζί μας φυσικά. Καληνύχτα σας και να προσέχετε. Broadcasting on 103.3 FM in stereo, this was LGR, London Greek Radio, and from our studios in N4, to our friends in Wood Green, over to WNK.
Thank you very much indeed for that lovely handover, Katia. That was Katia and London Greek Radio. They'll be back at 1 o'clock in the morning.
On 103.3 FM, WNK National and International News.
Good evening, it's 8 o'clock. I'm Jackie Shields, here with WNK News Headlines. A report from the Confederation of British Industry says Britain is on the verge of a recession. The CBI predicts a rise in unemployment as business...
The only constraint put on this new wave of stations by the Independent Broadcasting Authority was to provide something new. So, for a city the size of London, where local radio is a nightmare for a single station, it is the first real test of community radio. But it hasn't all been plain sailing. Stations who hoped for an autumn start are still waiting to go on the air, and some of those who have made it are experiencing difficulties in attracting advertisers, a situation which parallels the start of independent radio in 1973.
The date is October the 16th, 1973. The time, 5 a.m. Good morning. This, for the very first time, is Capital Radio.
Isn't it good to know?
Of all the incremental stations, Radio Thamesmead is the only one to have been previously on the air legally. The sole survivor of the cable experiment of the late 70s, Thamesmead was the obvious choice for the South East London licence. Thamesmead closed on cable last autumn and has since been working on the transition. Station manager Bob Smith told me how the transformation has been made.
It's not been easy. We were on cable for 12 years, a cable that's the old tech, decaying, falling to pieces, which meant that morale sank. But in recent years, with the arrival of the IBA incremental scheme, we were able to put effort into training. So in effect, we've looked upon the cable exercise as training to go on the FM transmitter.
How different is the community radio on the broadcast network on FM to how it was on cable? Have you had to make yourselves more commercial to compete with Capital?
Well, I think the great thing is we're going to have listeners. On cable, there was often a feeling that we were talking to ourselves or that there was a limited audience. But I think the FM transmitter puts us in exactly the same position as everybody else. We have to go out there and fight for listeners, literally fight. We're up against some very stiff competition, well-established stations. We need to be friendly, but we need to talk the same language. We need to talk the language of this part of London. The issues that concern people here, one of the major issues being the appallingness of transport. Public transport in South East London is non-existent.
To the average listener, though, can you convince them that community radio from Thamesmead is something more than coffee mornings and jumble sales?
That's right. I mean, that's the great danger. I think community is the wrong word. I mean, we think of ourselves as a neighbourhood radio station. But first and foremost, we see ourselves as a local radio station, but with the involvement of broadcasters who are, in fact, listeners. I mean, that's how we'd better define it. I think community radio has got a very worthy sound, a feeling that it is going to be lots and lots of very, very boring things. And what we're saying is that if we are boring, then your life must be boring because you are part of our mixture.
Besides the news stories, how much of a mix will there be between news and music on the station to keep the people listening?
Oh, that's right. I mean, I think, well, music is important. I mean, we're evolving a music policy, not one done by a machine, I might add, but one which grows out of the feelings of the people on the station. 120 volunteers, they all have their views, and what we're trying to do is reflect that. So we will have the approach during the day of a kindly familiar, friendly sort of sound, and the specialist music, world music, new country, I mean all the various aspects of specialist music will be catered for in the evenings. Again, because we have volunteers, that's the time they can make.
And the perennial $60,000 question, how much money has it cost to set everything up?
Well, we've had a loan of $250,000. If we do it on that, I think we will have done a remarkable job. A lot of the incrementals have substantially more money, or they've underestimated their costs. We've held costs, and if we go on air for that, and I think we will, we will have done a remarkable job.
Music radio is finally taking off too. The splitting of frequencies by independent radio, offering separate programmes on AM and FM, instead of providing the same output on both, has provided the listening public with at least one extra station in most areas of the UK.
LBC Crown FM 97.3.
It's 7 o'clock, I'm Alan King.
Usually the FM service will carry top 40 hits, whilst AM sticks to golden oldies or easy listening. That's in line with the surge by the Independent Broadcasting Authority, which shows older listeners prefer the medium wave. In London, Capital Radio has become Capital FM and Capital Gold, the latter giving a new lease of life to Radio 1 DJs of the 70s. The first new London-wide streamed music service, Jazz FM, was seen as the most lucrative of all the 21 original licences. So much so that the IBA had to persuade the Department of Trade and Industry to release another two frequencies.
We're knocking on heaven's door. Jazz FM 102.2, the hottest number in town.
On 102.2 FM, this is the Jazz Station. Jazz FM.
Ask three jazz fans to define their art form, and you'll probably get three different answers. To Jazz FM, it means anything from archive material to R&B, blues, soul, and gospel. Jazz FM has an FM signal the size of capitals to play with for a potential audience of around 8 million. For listeners in Europe hoping for a suitable FM lift, the frequency is 102.2. Former dance music pirate Kiss FM will open later this year, along with easy-listening Melody Radio, owned by the Hanson Trust. Julian Clover, Radio Netherlands, London.
Radio Netherlands, where creative production lives on.
Well, we do our best. Let's go back to the answer line now, Hilversum 724222, and a call that came in as we were on the air last Thursday.
This is Tom Moore from Orpington, Great Britain. You didn't mention today that Radio Bucharest has renamed itself to Radio Romania International.
Yes, you're quite right, as is proved by this off-air recording we made yesterday afternoon.
With our thanks for listening, we invite you to send us your remarks and suggestions on these programmes to the following address. Radio Romania International, P.O. Box 111, Bucharest, Romania. And now time for goodbye.
Not quite. I wonder who's playing the piano in the background there. Let me slip in a report monitored by Reuters in Nicosia on Tuesday. They heard an announcement from the director of the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, who inaugurated a new transmitter site near the Pakistani border. It's at a place called Sahadan in southeast Iran, and it seems programmes in Urdu, English and Arabic will go out from there, beamed to the Gulf Emirates, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, India and parts of the USSR. The site includes two 50-kilowatt medium-wave senders and two 500-kilowatt shortwave transmitters. It's not clear if these news transmitters are carrying their own programmes or are simply now in parallel with the regular external programmes from Tehran. We'd be interested in your observations.
Media Network. Minutes ahead when seconds count.
Join me on Monday for the research file. In the meantime, have a pleasant weekend.
Input on the output to Media Network Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands. Or fax your fax to 31 35 724 352.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.